Welcome to Transitions with Ruth Ann Rehm McCaffrey. I'm Santia, and I'm here with Ruth Ann. How are you, Ruth Ann?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks, Santia.
Good. So today we're going to talk about a topic called, we're calling it Peace with Inevitable Transitions.
Right.
You want to talk a little bit about what we're going to cover with that?
The idea that I had first was the whole process of aging, and certainly that's something that's universal, mm-hmm. and just because I guess I've just had a big birthday and it's made me aware of the differences in my life now as compared with even 10 or 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and so just finding a way to make the most out of this ongoing transition of aging is part of what I thought would be interesting to talk about because it is so universal.
And I like that you're saying making peace rather than sometimes if you look at media, it's about how to fight aging or
right.
how to beat a certain kind of cancer or something like that. Rather than focusing on it being maybe in a negative way, you're looking at it as making peace, having it be a positive.
Right,
transition.
or accepting the fact that it is the reality. Mm-hmm. And even though I saw a headline in a magazine the other day, 50 is the new 30, mm-hmm. or I'm thinking, oh my goodness, or 70 is the new 50.
I don't know what that means.
I don't think so. I think there are certain aspects of it that of our lives now, even at 70 or whatever, that are maybe more youthful than our parents enjoyed. But mm-hmm. it certainly has other parts of it that are a challenge.
Yeah.
So and you brought up a good point too, the idea of something as scary as cancer. I've heard from more than one cancer survivor that having that experience was very focusing and, in fact, brought about a quality of life that was a surprise mm-hmm. because it they couldn't avoid it. The cancer was there, and they dealt with it rather than try to sweep it away
sure.
and not think about it.
So you want to talk about a couple of steps with how to work through those kind of, I guess, coping mechanisms? You
right, want, okay. Yes. I'm thinking I'm going to deal with the one that's affecting us personally first rather than affecting a transition that, with a partner. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I always like people to consider is learning what gives us energy and what takes it away. Because in the end, the idea of having quality energy, and what I mean by quality energy is energy that is easily used if we need some. It's like having our gas tank full of the high quality octane. And so what gives us energy is different for everybody. For some people, it's, you know, a fast-paced walk, and for others, it's a conversation with friends, or for others, it's creating beautiful music, or going to a play, or drinking a great latte, or baking a cake. I mean, there are lots of things that can give us energy. At the same time, there are things that take energy away. Mm-hmm. And often that's being around negative people, having to deal with a lot of noise. If we're an introvert, that's pretty hard on introverts. Also, just being around people that are angry or having to do work that we don't like. And so it just takes a lot more out of us. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways to make peace more and more with inevitable challenges when they come up or transitions is to make sure that we have as much energy available to us as we possibly can. And that's often very conscious, it needs to be the result of conscious choice, mm-hmm. consciously saying, yes, I'm going to take time to call a friend. Yes, I'm going to take time to make a birthday cake for somebody I love. Yes, I'm going to take time to do my exercise or to eat something that's good for me. No, I'm not going to let myself get caught up in that conversation with somebody that always takes me down. No, I'm not going to eat wheat if I'm allergic to wheat, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So the first thing is to be teaching ourselves about our own energy sources, both incoming and outgoing, so that the choices we make are more in the incoming, on the incoming side of the equation.
And how can we tap into that to know that feeling? I know that that took me a while to understand that the energy of what your true energy is and how it feels. I know, I think what I ended up doing was, how does it feel in my gut? And how does it feel in my heart? But is that how others?
Yeah. Okay. If you're around something and you feel bad, that means the energy is taken away, or you feel an emotion that you would not choose, like guilt or sadness or fear or panic or being used by somebody, irritation. So if the resulting contact with either something you've eaten or a person or an activity or whatever produces a reaction inside of you that is not one that you like, that teaches you, oh, that takes energy away from me. If I can choose to do that or to do the opposite or something that's more joyful, please let me choose something that's more joyful, because that restores me. And then when one of these inevitable transitions comes along, if I've taught myself to be energy strong in my own life, then I have more going for me just to deal with the transition.
I like that one.
Okay.
That's very good.
That's the first one.
The first one.
Okay. The next one is to look at what's in our control. And there really are four aspects to analyzing: is something in my control? Is it something that I, that's number one, can't do? That's number two. So it's an action. Number three is that I can do now. Three is now. And four is that it moves me in a direction that is positive for me. So let's say that you are thinking, can I go outside and rake the leaves? Can I do that now? Do I want to rake the leaves? Well, we had a big storm around here yesterday and the leaves are all over the lawn. Will that make my life feel better if I can look out and see the yard all nice and neat and so on? If the answer is yes, then that's within your control. Mm-hmm. If it gets much trickier if we try to control another person. And so if we have somebody in our neighborhood or in our workplace or in the grocery store or on the freeway, and they are doing something that is irritating to us or frightening or you know, and if we had any kind of control over them, we would ask them to change or stop doing or whatever. So we've got another person, let's say, on the freeway who's going really slow. That's an irritation for me if I'm behind somebody. That and ugly cars. I just have trouble with that.
Ugly cars. That's funny.
So is it in my control? Can I do anything now to make that situation better? No. So we look at what's within our control and we focus on what we can do something about. And so what do we do about the ugly car on the freeway that's going too slow? We move. We move our car. We move into another lane, or we slow down enough until somebody else gets in front of us and then we can get away from them. So it's important to think about control as a choice that we have, and to not ask ourselves to be trying to influence something that there's not a chance that I can influence that person with the ugly car. I mean, that's, they're right, riding along just happy as they can be.
And they may love their ugly
car.
They
probably love it and it wouldn't help at all if I tried to say anything to them, even if they were, had their car and parked in the driveway next to mine. Although that's not the case. But so that's a second one, is to think about what's in our control.
Okay, so the first one's the energy and an understanding your energy and what makes you feel good and what doesn't.
Right.
And how to move towards that energy that makes you feel better.
That's right.
And then second, control, looking at what your level of control is, and also, and then if it's not in your control, letting that go and acknowledging that you don't
have control. Or doing something else, usually you're making a choice to do something else.
Which then you are back into control.
Right. You're taking care of yourself, which is what, again, if we go back to the freeway, what I can do in control of my car in my lane is to find another place mm-hmm. that I can put it. So I'm not having to look at the ugly car. I get around the person who's going really slow, or get away from a car that's weaving or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, so that we're back in the driver's seat again.
Okay.
The next one is to have realistic expectations, because so much of the time I am working with clients, I'll ask, well, now, what is it that you want in this situation? So we're talking about aging. What do I want? Well, I want to have a body that looks like it did when it was 20, and I want to be able to do all the things that I did then, and I want to be able to stay up late and work on projects and get up in the morning. I want to be able to sleep well all night, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many of those are realistic? Because the truth is our bodies do change, and they are able to do things, maybe different things, or maybe not some things that they did when we were young. And our energy level may not allow us to stay up late and work hard and pull all-nighters, for example, and then try to get up the next day and have any kind of a quality day at all, because mm-hmm. we're just worn out. So setting a realistic expectation is saying, okay, what is the truth of what we can expect? Let's just look at that square in the eye, because the difference, if we look at the truth and we look at what we'd like it to be, and there's a big gap there. That big gap is stress, mm-hmm. because we're beating our head against the wall. We're trying to make our body do something, for example, that it can't do anymore. Or we're trying to make something happen that is just not possible. And so let's get a grip on what's real and see if we can make it the best real that it possibly could be, but not get ourselves caught up and asking ourselves to do something that's just not possible.
And you made an interesting comment before we got started about your mind being very capable. And mm-hmm. I think that that's maybe with realistic expectations, is maybe if the body isn't doing quite the things you want it to do, mm-hmm. also acknowledging that your mind may be doing much, much better things than what it was doing when you were 20.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you can set some expectations of, you know, I wouldn't have been able to make these decisions at 20 that now I can make at.
Right. Well, there is a quality that comes to our thinking through experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been called different things. I've heard it called wisdom. They say, you know, sometimes people in their elder years have a different wisdom. As much as anything, it is the buildup of experience and choices and failures and wins, mm-hmm. and all of that taken together lets people have a perspective, particularly when there's an awareness connected mm-hmm. to it, that lets us make the most of our time now. Maybe it's not our body, but maybe it is our mind.
Mm-hmm. I think there's some amazing things that when I look back at how I handled situations, relationships, jobs in my 20s versus mm-hmm. now in my 40s, it's so different.
Right.
It's very different. So yeah, even though I can't maybe, you know, get up at 4 a.m. and pull an all-nighter like what I used to be able to do, I think the way I interact with people is in a much more meaningful way.
Right. Well, and that brings up a good point, is that as life goes along, we learn new skills and new ways of being that we can then draw on. It's going to be different. We're growing, hopefully, and our life keeps evolving. I love to think about it as we keep expanding
mm-hmm.
and including new ways of being. In fact, this we were talking about before the show too, there is a class at Harvard, and I get a daily email that talks about daily good in the world and has different articles. And I can't remember the professor's name, and I apologize to him if he ever ends up listening to this podcast. But it is the third most popular class at Harvard. And he teaches his students to think with awareness by studying ancient Chinese philosophers in their writings translated, of course, but he challenges his students to smile at the checker in this grocery store, hold the door open for the person coming into this class, give the waitress a little extra tip, or give your seat to somebody on the subway or whatever. I mean, think about trying these little evidences of kindness out in the world and then seeing how it feels. Mm-hmm. And a part of what will happen is that feeling of doing something generous in the world it shifts our mind around,
mm-hmm.
and makes it, I think it's part of that expansion.
I think so too. You're feeding your mind with those positive,
right.
positive experiences.
Right. Because apparently at Harvard, there are many students who come in pretty focused on what their study is going to be. And so increasing their ability to think about themselves in relationship to other people in the world and reaching out to other people in these small ways. It doesn't have to be big. It's just something that, though, then gives us an opportunity to go, well, how did that feel?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what it would be like if I did that more. And so there you go. The mind is given a chance to look at an experience and see if that's, do I keep that? Do I like how that feels? Was it worth it? Would mm-hmm. I do it again? Would that make my thought about what I might even do in the world in my career? Could I maybe think about something else?
Mm-hmm.
And so his class has really been very important for these students. It's, like I say, it's the third most chosen class at Harvard University. So,
and I do believe that whatever we do leaves an imprint. So mm-hmm. even if it's just for a few seconds or maybe a day for an individual, I think whatever we do, whether it's kindness or maybe not being so kind,
mm-hmm.
I think that does leave an imprint
on us and
on others.
Mm-hmm. the other person.
Yeah.
I love chatting up people, checkers at the store, and taxi drivers when we were on our trip. I mean, it's just so fun to hear people's stories mm-hmm. and to be enthusiastic about them. It's just fun. That's one of the things that I like to do.
I love that.
Yeah. The next suggestion that I have in dealing with these inevitable transitions is to set some limits or set some boundaries on us so that we don't keep doing the same things over and over that cost us energy, for example, or that if we are paying attention and we realize that a person in our lives is maybe using us, because we're realizing, oh, that wasn't very nice, that mm-hmm. comment that they made to us, or, well, that didn't feel very good when I heard that tone of voice or whatever. And if we can realize that we can have some boundaries around us and that we can make some choices that will protect us
mm-hmm.
from situations and people that are really their intent or intention is not to be generous to us. And so we really don't have to be around them unless we put it, maybe take it in small doses or again, do it very consciously. So mm-hmm. it's that whole boundary thing and setting limits. Another thing is people that are negative and complain and gripe about stuff, I can listen to that for just a little while, and then I can't do that mm-hmm. anymore. I set a limit that doesn't feel good to me, and I don't think it's particularly productive, and it just feels like somebody is sticking their vacuum hose in my heart and mm-hmm. just sucking out all my good things that I have stored mm-hmm. in there. So I think giving ourselves permission to say enough is enough, or I'm not going to go around that person, or
that's right.
I'm going to just say no.
Because it's amazing when you make that choice and you set that limit and say you do have someone that is maybe a little bit more negative, and then you don't have as much of an association with that person, mm-hmm. and then you have the association again. It's amazing how different you can look at that person in the situation.
It gives you perspective,
doesn't
it? It
really does.
Yeah.
And then think, wow, okay. That, because I think sometimes, for me, I've had people like that in my life that I just get used to it. And then I get that energy that just is part of how I interact. And then I realize once I don't have that in my life, that it's feels quite different.
Well, it feels like when we're so close to it, it feels like this is normal.
It does.
And it's that old frog in the pot of water. You put the frog in the pot of water when it's cold, and you just heat it up, and it doesn't even know that the pot's boiling,
yeah.
and there's a, you know, frog for dinner. But
and you don't notice that negativity until it's gone, and then
right.
you realize, wow, I've noticed for myself, how oftentimes then I'm thinking how much I either made adjustments or changes to me being me in order to accommodate that.
That's right. You give up
yeah.
part of yourself. And the very last thing, and I'm not going to go into this in great detail because this is worth a whole show, is the whole idea of mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And really everything we've talked about up to now is a part of mindfulness. And what I mean by that is being very alive and aware of what's happening right now. What is good for me right now? What choices am I making right now? How am I in tune with and in touch of all of the experiences, whether it's washing the dishes or mm-hmm. doing the laundry or making love or kissing a baby or whatever is going on.
Or eating chocolate.
That's true.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. So it's being very aware. And that's one of the most wonderful gifts that we give ourselves, because the payoff is just rich in a very quality experience all the time, every day, no matter what's happening.
So I love your steps, the listening to yourself, the energy mm-hmm. piece, control, having realistic expectations, setting limits, and then finally looking at being mindful.
Right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. This is Santia. For more information about Ruth Ann, please go to her website at careermi.com. This program is produced and engineered by Rob Bergoni at Brown Pelican Productions. For more information about Rob, go to robbergoni.com.